Welcome to Nothing Ventured with me, Arish Shah. This is the podcast where we explore the people and stories that make up the tech and venture ecosystem. Don't forget to subscribe, like, rate, and share the podcast because it really helps us get the word out to more people who are curious about understanding even more about the world of venture capital. This season of Nothing Ventured is sponsored by Odin. Odin helps angels, VCs, and founders to raise and deploy capital seamlessly. You can structure your SPVs and now run your funds, handle capital calls, portfolio management more smoothly and easily in one place. Founders use Odin to raise their entire round in a few clicks by simply sending investors a link and receiving investments immediately. Odin works with over 5,000 investors and over 150 emerging fund managers and angel syndicates globally. Head to joinodin.com to learn more. That's joinodin.com. Hello and welcome to Nothing Ventured. Today in the studio with me, I had Nick Sharma and Mo Al-Amari, co-founders of Biocortex. In today's episode, we talked about personalizing medication. Will this drug work for you?
What Biocortex is able to do is to actually address that and to say for that individual, is that drug going to work?
The fact that it costs $2.6 billion to create an asset within the pharmaceutical world.
In the pharmaceutical area at the moment, drug development costs, you know, approximately $2.6 billion per asset and potentially actually a lot more.
How they are building the world's largest biology graph with billions of data points.
In fact, we believe it's the world's largest knowledge graph in existence that is biology-based with billions of nodes and tens of billions of connections.
How to reflect biology in silico and borrowing from NASA's playbook working since the 80s. We talked about emulation versus simulation and tech bio versus biotech and how trust is essential to building a co-founder relationship, as well as how they are keeping the culture alive so that the team is pulling in the right direction. Let's get straight into it. In the studio today with me, I have Nick Sharma and Mo Al-Amari. Nick and Mo are the co-founders of Biocortex, a tech bio backed by Hoxton and Sofinnova, providing actionable insights for future therapeutic development. Prior to founding Biocortex, Nick was a consultant neurologist at the National Hospital of Neurology and Neurosurgery, a neuroscientist at UCL, and is a fellow at the Center for the Advancement of Medical Innovation, whilst Mo has a background in engineering, having joined Rolls-Royce as an AI researcher and ending up as the head of AI for the Central Technology Group at Rolls-Royce. He has also held honorary research fellow positions at both City University of London and UCL. Nick, Mo, really great to have you in the studio with me today.
Thanks for having us.
So we're going to dive right in. Biocortex is a really complex business, as I have learned, and not only in the technology that you've built, but also in the potential opportunities that it presents in the fields of drug discovery and development. It would be great if you could explain the vision for the business and what the Biocortex engines are able to do that drive you to those outcomes.
Okay. So the vision for the company is actually quite simple. At the moment, if somebody goes in to see a clinician and they're prescribed a medication, they don't actually know it's going to work for that individual. So that's okay if you're taking paracetamol for a headache, but if you're starting a sort of regime for cancer and you don't know you're going to respond, you know, that isn't a great situation to be in. And that causes a huge amount of uncertainty. What Biocortex is able to do is to actually address that and to say for that individual, is that drug going to work? And in the pharmaceutical area at the moment, drug development costs, you know, approximately $2.6 billion per asset and potentially actually a lot more. What we're able to do is look at that asset very early on and say, look, is there going to be a significant interaction that's going to prevent it working in the clinic? We can talk a bit more about the tech.
Yeah, I would love to understand because the tech is actually applicable in a broader sort of way as opposed to just simply being in the kind of pharma medical context. Yeah. So how do you look at that and what is that application, I guess?
So we have two pieces of tech, two key pieces of tech within Biocortex. So the first one is what we label Carbon Knowledge, which is a knowledge management system that contains vast amount of information. In fact, we believe it's the world's largest knowledge graph in existence that is biology based with billions of nodes and tens of billions of connections currently living within this knowledge management solution. And then the second piece of technology, which is the one that we are actually more excited about in terms of its application and utility in the pharma space is something that we have labeled carbon mirror, which reflects reality in silico. So again, this has been imported from the engineering space, specifically within aerospace. So before any mission critical application or any system is built and tested in real life in aerospace, we basically emulate and all aspects of that system before it actually goes live and in production. And that emulation capability, which is slightly different simulation, we can touch on that, is really key component of why we get things right first time in aerospace. And that thinking and that methodology and that framework is being brought into the pharma space in Biocortex under these two pieces of technology.
So that's the way we conceptualize that in the pharmaceutical space is we think about the human as being the hardware.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the human cells, et cetera. And we conceptualize the bacteria that surrounds us, our geography, our lifestyle as the operating system. And then you have drugs or pharmaceuticals that are a bit like apps. So therefore, you know, we've all had that situation. You get a new phone or, you know, you forget to update the phone and actually the app doesn't work. So, you know, it's annoying, right? But we think the same thing actually happens with pharmaceuticals. And we're taking this approach of emulation, which has been tried and tested by NASA for decades, into the pharmaceutical space. So it's the idea of getting it right first time.
So in very layman's terms, right, it sounds like what you're doing is you are using your technology to emulate. And I do want to understand that difference between emulation and simulation. But the interactions between your body's sort of natural state with these medicines Absolutely. As they are being developed, right? And presumably, because you talked about sort of geography, lifestyle, and diet, etc., a lot of this will be down to sort of microbiome and bacterial interaction. Would that be fair?
Yeah, absolutely. So we've all actually co-evolved with bacteria. So, you know, there's a lot of hype about the microbiome, but it's probably the only area of medicine that I've ever come across that we've actually co-evolved with. So there hasn't been a single person that's ever existed that hasn't had an interaction between their own physiology, either the way their body works, and the bacteria that surrounds them.
Mm.
So it's a really key component that we're only just starting to tap the surface of.
But also to clarify, we're not saying in no way that bacteria is everything, right? Yeah, so this is not true. The only reason, of course, that drugs fail. We look into all sorts of aspects, but bacteria seems to be playing, as Nick was saying, key role in why drugs fail within the pharmaceutical industry.
Right. And so talk me through the sort of concept of emulation versus simulation, because, I mean, I guess to some extent one could conflate the two, right? They probably have similar sort of processes and outcomes. But in your words, what would be that?
Words are definitely being used interchangeably in different verticals, but within the computer science domain and engineering domain, so they mean two different things and very distinct. So simulation is the mimicry of a system as a whole, as a black box. So you don't necessarily look into the details of how it's done. For as long as you can match the inputs to the outputs of a certain system, that would be the simulation of a system. Emulation dives deeper into the processes within the system. So it looks into a white box approach. So you have to understand what goes into the system. And in terms of the engineering domain, it basically means you look at the hardware as well as the software. So you truly understand how things are running. And the purpose of this, which is a very old technology, just to say, it's not really new. It's been used for decades. And as Nick highlighted, it's been used by NASA since the 80s in terms of, and this is how they get their missions right first time, is they do a lot of emulation of every single subsystem within like a rocket or a satellite to make sure that everything works before it actually goes out into, because they only have a single shot at this. And that mimicry of both the hardware and the software is, again, what we are trying to achieve within the human biology. We think of us as the hardware, and as Nick was saying, everything else surrounding us is the operating system, and then the drug being the apps, and the interaction between all of these things is sometimes doesn't work. And that's what we're trying to uncover, these hidden relationships between them.
And I think the key difference from a pragmatics perspective about interacting, say, with pharma or a clinician or anybody else is that you can actually look at the actual mechanisms and you can say, look, this isn't working because of the following reasons. Yeah, this particular bit of pathway that's involved. So there isn't this black box approach to say, well, okay, the algorithm's going to say yes or no. We have no idea what's driving that. And this comes back to the point that Mo made. If you're taking the medication, you want it to work.
Yeah.
You don't want to be the person who it doesn't work. But if you actually look at it from a reality, you know, from a realistic point of view, say with melanoma, so a form of skin cancer at the moment, if you at the moment using state-of-the-art treatment the response rate is only 30%.
Mm.
So if you flip that over, so if I'm sat on the opposite side speaking to an oncologist, that's a 70% chance that I'm going to fail.
Yep.
And I just don't think that's acceptable when we know that actually we can change that and improve that.
Yeah. I mean, a couple of things that sort of came up whilst you were talking, certainly, Mo, on the sort of simulation versus emulation point. So one of the things I think both of you are very clear about is that BioCortex isn't an AI business in the way that we think, or that most people think about AI. And from what you said, it sounds like AI is more of a simulator than emulator. Would that be fair to say?
That would definitely be fair. So if you look at deep neural network used for modeling purposes, then it would definitely be a simulation rather than an emulation. Just to say, we're not anti-AI. We do use AI, AlphaFold and other technologies. They are great for that purpose. But we do strongly believe that in mission-critical application, and surely somebody's health is mission-critical, you want to know, as Nick was saying, you want to understand the fundamentals of why I will or will not respond. And that's why you just cannot, I mean, as it stands, AI is definitely not the solution.
Okay, got it. So moving on for a second, you both come from clearly very different backgrounds and disciplines. So how and when did you realize that not only you had an incredible opportunity in front of you, but that this was something that you wanted to do specifically together? So I'd love for you to talk us through your kind of co-founding journey.
Yeah, so Mo and I met at a random... Actually, you're better at telling the story than I am. I'll just let you tell it.
Yeah. It started... We keep changing. So it started almost 8 years ago. So basically...
Oh, wow.
I was working on a colleague of mine, unfortunately, his dad passed away from motor neuron disease, MND, horrible condition. Mm. And then one of our other colleagues was diagnosed with that. And given that I was hired as an AI engineer initially, he was like, hey, AI. It was just at the start of AI being everything, a solution for everything.
For the second time, yeah.
For the second time, indeed. Yeah. And so he's like, can you help? And I thought, I'll have a conversation. And obviously, I couldn't because I just didn't know the first thing about the whole disease. But there was something that really intrigued me is people living with MND, they lose the ability to speak, so they cannot communicate. And that actually affects them very, very deeply, which I happened to learn that later. But my background being in natural language processing, I thought, actually, we could develop a language model to help ease the conversation between somebody having MND and everyone else. Think Professor Stephen Hawking, that sort of thing. Anyway, that started as an idea which progressed into a whole initiative that had Google, Microsoft, and lots of other companies backing this idea of helping people living with speech impediment generally, but more focused on MND. Nick sat at the board of the MND Association. We met in a random dinner. We're both, shy. I wouldn't go antisocial, but definitely not into,
I'm antisocial. I just have to call that.
We were the only two in a corner. He told me, I still remember the conversation about, neurons. And, again, this is the conversation that, for me, actually started why I wanted to do this, is how bad we were doing in this space. Mm. I clearly had no idea how bad we were doing in this space. But, Nick?
Yeah, so then we basically got on very well. And I think, we both code, we both get data. And then we ended up with joint PhD students, joint grants. And then I tend to go to Mo. I mean, I thought my maths was pretty good, but then obviously Mo's a little bit better than me at maths now. And I don't write any code anymore, which I'm deeply sad about.
Well, it's better than me. I keep starting and then stopping. So,
yeah. the only code I write now is actually to help my daughter with her sort of Comsky. But I tend to go to Mo with my really sort of crappy maths questions.
Okay.
And so the point there was that, look, we have all these bacteria surrounding us. If you approach it with a conventional pharmaceutical approach of taking bacteria A, testing it, there isn't enough time in the universe because it's just not going to work. So much to my surprise, Mo actually, did have a solution to that problem. And that was really when I think we realized that we were onto something here.
And so the solution to that problem presumably was, okay, there is a way, or rather the thinking behind the solution is you don't have to go on a bacteria by bacteria basis. You can essentially use computer science to
emulate. This is where emulation are the perfect solution, because you can afford to model billions of different scenarios very cost effectively, while obviously we cannot afford to try out billions of different therapeutics in real life.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, the fact that you're sort of 7 years on suggests that you've already beaten the odds in terms of co-founder relationships as well as the typical VC founder relationship, which, as I've said on this podcast before, tends to outlast the average UK marriage. But you only founded BioCortex a couple of years ago. So presumably prior to that, were you doing sort of research, getting the fundamental sort of proposition or science behind what you know what you were going to build locked down?
We didn't. We were both working in our own sort of respective areas, and then we were collaborating on certain things. We didn't do any of the work prior to us actually founding sort of BioCortex beforehand, so nothing came in from either of our sort of previous employers or anything. But the idea behind it, came about from those discussions.
On your point about the like, how long have we been born together? I want to say, obviously, like trust, which stems from transparency, which is I can see why lots of founders are not necessarily. It's a relationship, really. It is. My wife keeps telling me about how much I speak to Nick, but it really, boils down to trust and basically transparency between founders, which can, you know, if that's there, everything else is easy.
Well, this is one of the topics that I think we've discussed on the podcast several times. You look at programs like Entrepreneurs First, where you're essentially throwing together potential co-founders. Yes, they have a few months to sort of, you know, do the dating, as it were, but ultimately that's not a massively sufficient time to build that trust, exactly as you say, and that understanding the values and I guess the objectives and what it is that you both hope to achieve, right? I mean, I've worked with businesses in the past where co-founders have had diametrically opposite sort of understandings of where they wanted to take the business, which ultimately led to, you know, one of the co-founders departing. And, you know, that's an isolated story, I guess, in the tech and venture ecosystem. And I guess, I mean, the other thing we haven't necessarily talked about this, but that goes again, as I say, in terms of the relationship with your investors as well, right? And I mean, how would you describe that relationship?
That relationship, it's always an interesting relationship. I mean, we are very lucky to have two great sort of VCs. And funds. So we have Sofinnova, and it's Ed who is our board member, who's, you know, absolutely fantastic, very supportive, does the appropriate challenges. We actually learn a lot, which is great. Hussein, obviously a lot more technical, and sort of pushes us on that front. So yeah, we have a really good relationship with both of them, I'd say.
Yeah, no, that's excellent. I mean, I think I had a call with a founder yesterday with a very similar sort of story. He's not someone that loves taking venture capital, but did. And he was actually really pleasantly surprised as to how that particular VC lent in to the business, but also knew when to step back and, you know, let them get on with stuff. Moving on, and this is something that I think is quite interesting. You describe the business as a tech bio company as opposed to a biotech, which I think most people would understand. How would you explain the difference, and why is it important to make that differentiation?
I like your definition, actually.
So I think we call ourselves a tech bio because the tech itself has intrinsic value. Mm-hmm. And so, say, some of our engagements actually across different verticals, the tech itself is beyond the state of the art in other verticals.
So it's translatable into.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's why we consider ourselves a tech bio as opposed to the opposite way around.
Yeah. So presumably biotech would be, okay, let's find a drug and solve for that particular thing, whereas a tech bio essentially is build the technology that has applications beyond just the one element, even though you may be pursuing that outcome.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's the applicability across different verticals, that sort of foundational element. We describe Carbon Mirror as a foundational emulator because it can be used across different scenarios. And this is really important with our tech is that we don't, you know, when we have these engagements in different verticals, it is actually, you know, the same software that's running actually for something, say, in manufacturing versus consumer health versus pharma. You know, we're not shoving all this together and calling it, oh, it's one platform. It is actually the same. It is the same basic code, which is actually really important to us.
Yeah. So final question, I guess. You know, as we discussed, you've raised seed from a couple of great firms, Hoxton and Sofinnova. And having worked with you personally for some time, I know that you run the business with a very close eye on maintaining capital efficiency. But beyond the obvious things like burn and runway, What are the things that keep you up at night as founders, and how do you deal with those concerns on a day-to-day basis? And I guess the reason I ask this question specifically of of you and a company like BioCortex, the company is in sort of a very deep R&D phase at the moment, right? So to some extent, there's stability because you know where you're going to spend the money, you know the sort of trials that you need to do, etc. But at the same time, you are a startup. You are aiming to achieve certain milestones and grow and potentially raise additional funding down the track. So yeah, what are the things that sort of really keep you up? I mean, apart from the fact you wake up at 4 a.m. anyway, but yeah, yes, what are things that keep you up at night?
Yeah, obviously, beside the usual things that any startup has, I think we're very focused on our culture at BioCortex, and I think there are two parts to that. One is keeping the team who are from a really wide range of backgrounds, all pulling in the same direction at the same time of actually, you know, getting ready to actually hire a lot more people, or not a lot, but more people to bring into that and to be able to push really hard on Carbon Mirror. Then there's the bit that I always ask people whenever I speak to lots of people is at the end is what are we missing? You know, the bit that worries me the most is what I can't see.
Yeah, the unknown unknowns.
Exactly.
Yeah.
One thing more is probably the possibilities because this is applicable across a wide range of things that you get pulled from investors, from like potential partners, et cetera, in different directions and just maintaining focus and keeping the narrative and like the team, as Nick was saying, focused on one thing, which is like we want to achieve this next milestone is sometimes, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that problem, which exists again with a lot of startups, is there are so many shiny things that you could pursue. Yeah. And, you know, we've talked about, you know, okay, could you pursue this revenue stream versus that, or should we focus down on something else? It can be very, very distracting for founders. It can be very distracting for teams because, you know, if they don't have the guardrails as to, well, this is what we're aiming for, if they start pulling in different directions, then you ultimately, you know, you do five things badly rather than one thing's well, right?
Absolutely.
And I mean, your team is quite small with that said, right? So you've only got about a dozen odd people within the BioCortex team. How do you think about, you know, to your point, these different disciplines, because you have people coming from medical backgrounds, people from obviously computer science backgrounds. How have you been able to build that common purpose? Did they, you know, were they purpose driven when they joined BioCortex? Like, is that a fundamental part of why they're doing the work?
Just to say, we're hugely proud of the team.
Yeah.
They are a phenomenal team and have delivered amazing things. I think the key things are they, you know, from a culture point of view, everybody's, we operate on the principle of very high talent density. So because obviously that keeps the average up and then everybody pushes very hard, which is great. We do, you know, the challenges that we had was actually sort of lexicon. Everybody uses the same word, like model, and yeah, it means different things to a
definitely
clinician,
means different things to me, yeah.
to different people. So we've had to work really hard on that.
Just one thing you said about like different disciplines, computer science. We have so many disciplines. It takes a lot of different expertise to actually. So we have physicists, material science engineer, technologists, developers, as in we let alone obviously the scientists, the clinicians, it just takes a lot of different speciality to come in. And on the first day, it is not as obvious for every one of them. Okay, what am I doing here? What is my role? So it's been an interesting journey. But want to echo the next point about like we're really proud of them because this wasn't easy for them or for us actually to just go through the last couple of years and be where we are right now.
Yeah. I mean, actually, I was just gonna add because the team is predominantly remote first, right? Like.
Yeah, we do have offices and, you know, we're in probably 2-3 times a week. So we're not completely remote.
Okay, but that has obviously been, you know, one of these contentious issues which lots of talking heads have been talking about, right? Like, you know, you have quite prominent figures in the UK saying get back to the office. You have a lot of Silicon Valley types. Again, you know, there's nothing better than that in-person interaction. But I guess for deeply sort of research-led fields, that I mean, certainly in my mind, there is a benefit to actually being out of the office for those 2-3 days, whatever it might be, because it allows you to actually just get deep into the work that you're trying to do. Would that be fair?
Yeah, it's a combination, I'd say, that you need time not in the office just to get on and, you know, deliver the results. But the time in the office is fantastic about trying to iron out certain points, or just trying to work out how to solve a particular problem. We also spend a lot of time traveling with the team, you know, with sort of different partnerships. And yeah, again, very proud of, even after like a 12-14 hour flight, of people just sort of, you know, sort of going straight into meetings and just really knocking it out of the park, actually.
And we're very tight on security on the as in from day one. We've actually set the standard of all the tools. Like, we've made all the tools needed available on day one, so that it allowed the remote working to actually be effective, rather than trying to come up with hacks or solutions just to get the job done.
Yeah. No, it. I mean, as I said, I've worked with you guys for a year, and I think, you know, it's been actually incredible for someone like me who's come out of, you know, both traditional as well as sort of software background. In finance, obviously, to see that sort of level of engagement that you clearly have across the team, but also the ethic and the work ethic that you guys both have. And I don't think it would be unfair to say, you know, you're not 25-year-old sort of, you know, working out of the garage. So, you know, it's pretty impressive to see the sort of, you know, the output, and also, you know, the progress that you guys have made over the last couple of years, and let's face it, the last couple of years, certainly from a venture perspective, you know, have not been easy years. And I guess maybe as a closing point, how do you see sort of the tech biotech space at the moment? Is it sort of evolving? Is there more focus on it, or you know, I think there was quite a lot in probably the last 12 months where there'd been a bit of a pullback. So yeah, how are you seeing that at the moment?
Yeah, I think there's a large sort of push towards this area. I think there's always going to be a lot of sort of noise versus signal. I think the community is now evolving with its own definitions of what a tech bio is. There's obviously a lot of hype around certain words like a foundational sort of model. But yeah, I think it's going to be a very interesting area moving forward.
Yeah, amazing.
Yeah, I also think that the market is probably saturated with AI tools for drug discovery, where this is really not where the point, like the main pain point for pharma is. So having, which we've heard it, like, it's refreshing to see a company that is doing something different, well-established, and actually focusing on the entire drug development pipeline. So I think it's going to be an exciting future.
Amazing. Well, look, Nick and Mo, thank you so much for joining me in the studio today. For our listeners, where's the best place for them to find you online? Are you on LinkedIn, Twitter? Where can they find you?
So we are on LinkedIn, and then at biocortex.com.
Yes, okay. LinkedIn. Definitely.
Amazing. Thank you so much for joining. I really appreciate
it. Thank you for having us.
Thank you.